Okay, so tonight's talk is the third in the series, and it's called, this is module three. Again, the series is called Mentor or Supervisor or Both, Guiding Your Teens and Tweens into Adulthood. This is module three, session three, which is Would Your Kids Tell You? Having Your Kids Seek Your Guidance, and in our language, mentorship, when they need it most. So that's what this is all going to be about. We're going to be talking about, is it possible, in fact, and how, what would that look like if your children were able to actually seek your guidance when they need it most? Now, let's be honest, when they need it most means when they're getting into trouble, right? They don't need it. If they got a report card with straight A's, they don't need much of your help. They typically need your help when they're getting in trouble. How can you get them to do that? It's my absolute delight to introduce our lovely daughter, Sarah. Sarah is, she's a social work student in her last year working for an MSW, and she's also a social work intern at our Beacon. And I did a talk on this topic in Mariah School 7 months ago, and I know it's a hard sell to come up with the notion that, you know, that your kids can really talk to you about anything. There are many practical questions, and I asked Sarah to come along, so I threw it open to Q&A, so you can ask any questions to me, or feel free to ask to Sarah. You can ask anything you like about what it was like growing up at home under those rules, and I hope you'll find it helpful and perhaps entertaining as well. Okay, I'll see you soon, Sarah. Thank you so much. So let's get going, please. Sarah's going to come back during Q&A. Again, good evening, everyone. Okay, so our topic again is Would Your Kids Tell You? And I'm going to walk you through the presentation. And I think we'll do what we did last time, that if you have a question that I'm absolutely not clear, feel free to wave a hand, digital hand. And Chesky, thank you very much, Chesky, again. Chesky's our man in the booth. He'll open up, but again, only if it's really important and you really don't understand what I'm saying. Other than that, we'll just go ahead and we'll have a very substantial amount of time for questions at the end. There will be two points tonight where I'm actually going to ask you for input. I'm gonna ask you questions and I'm going to ask you for input. During that time, I would ask if you, Chesky is going to enable the chat, so feel free to enable your chat and you can type responses. Okay, as we did before the other session, I'd like to offer everyone the opportunity to, if we can do it in 30 seconds, please, to share from the first two sessions we had, how did it affect your parenting? And was there anything that you used that was practical and helpful? Or if you, as I said last time, it's feel free to say that you disagree with me about something. That you say, you listen, Rabbi Horowitz, I listened to you, I tried it and it doesn't work, or I'm just not comfortable with it at all. That's part of the learning process. So feel free to wave if you have anything you'd like to share, and we'll all be delighted to listen. That's part of learning and growing together. If you're really bold, and we spoke about embracing our mistakes last time. So if you found something didn't really work that well the way you thought it would, share that also. I think that's really important. So go ahead, please. Chesky, any hands?
They're very shy tonight.
Okay, well, let's just give them a minute. A few more seconds, and then we'll get started. Any hands, folks?
15 seconds.
Don't see any hands? Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, let's get going then. Maybe you'll want to share it during question and answer. So, before we start again, I just wanted to thank Michael and Estelle Stein for sponsoring this series. I deeply appreciate the support of our work over the years. I really want to thank Chesky for volunteering to be in the control room. I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing if you weren't with us, so I deeply appreciate it. And I also want to thank Dr. Aviva Goldstein, who worked with me on this presentation. Okay, let's get going. So let's talk about the culture of your home. And we're going to spend some time talking and thinking about culture. And what I mean by culture is that people in your home, people visiting your home, there's a certain set of unwritten rules that becomes the culture in your home. For example, we don't take phone, we leave our phones off during dinner. That's a culture thing. You know, we like to spend Sundays together. Whatever that culture is, I want to talk about what's the norm and how would you like your children to reflect back on your home as they're leaving your home, and every moment from the time they're born until then, what would you like them to remember about your home? Okay, and the purpose of this exercise, it's actually it's one of the things I mentioned Stephen Covey last week, the Seven Habits. He also talks about a 70th birthday party, same idea. So your son gets up at the Ofruf. You know, a very famous historian once said that when people are alive, there are presidents, prime ministers, public figures, there are millions, hundreds of millions, billions of words written about them. If 30 years later, all they get is a sentence, okay? 30 years later, you got a sentence. Truman dropped the bomb. Roosevelt won the war, right? What's your sentence gonna be? And think about it, what would you like your children to say? Our home was, I leave it completely to you, but perhaps during the days or weeks as we're going through this process of studying and learning and thinking about parenting, I encourage you to think about what you would like your children to say about your home. And I propose to you that if you don't think about it, it probably won't happen. If you think about it and plan about it and build your home around these principles, I believe you'll have a much better chance of achieving them. Again, this is an open thing. There are no right or wrong answers. We're gonna, tonight, as it relates to the issue of children providing in their parents, there's some really important information that does relate to this exercise, and we're gonna go back to it, okay? I'll give you two examples of what it looks like when we have culture. The culture of a home. I don't mean culture, you know, class. It means the feel, the flavor, the unwritten rules, you would say even the North Star of your home. What are the principles? We treat everybody with respect. You know, those are those types of things. And these things are very powerful. You know, and one thing that always struck me when I read it years ago, and I think about it often, you guys remember, ladies and gentlemen, you remember that Tylenol scare? Probably a while ago. Anybody? Tylenol scare? Yeah, we got some hands. So what happened was there were a few bottles of Tylenol that were laced with poison. And Johnson & Johnson had a very tough call to make. I believe it was 8 or 9 people were injured or died. And Johnson & Johnson had a very tough call to make. The head of the company, do we go and pull everything off the shelf? Maybe we'll wait a little bit and see what it looks like. And they did an incredibly bold thing. They yanked every single one of their products, of the Tylenol, off the shelves worldwide. Imagine what a job that is. Imagine what a financial loss it was. And it turned out actually in the short term, it was horrible for them. In the long term, it was really fantastic because everybody built up the trust that they, you know, they built up their trust in everybody's eyes because they did the responsible thing. So they interviewed the CEO. I read an article years ago, and shortly after it happened, someone said, like, how did you do this? Like, what made you, there were other ways you could have done this. And you see this in institutions, God forbid, they catch, you know, an abuser is caught. So, you know, some schools, like some institutions, let's not talk about it, or we give out a little bit of information. And some just come forward and say, listen, the kids matter. We're going to make sure that nobody's hurt. And if they were, they get help. That's a culture thing. So Tylenol did that thing. So they asked him, how, you know, what made you do this? And he said, oh, it's very simple. That the previous CEO or the one before him, maybe it was even the founder, had a a tablet, like a sign that said customers, employees, shareholders. That was the sign that he had. It said customers, employees, shareholders. And because that was his North Star, that became the culture of the company. I'll get to this story with Rabbi Wein in Yeshiva Snow Days. It'll illustrate the point as well. And that became the culture of the company. So when he had a decision to make, the shareholders, at least temporarily, you can imagine the stock dropped considerably right away. Again, in the long term, it proved to be very, very healthy for them. But if he was just thinking about the current shareholders and how they're going to tide over the next year or two, he would have tried to do something differently. And if he was thinking of the workers, he would have thought, but since the customers were first, he said, I just thought of that. And I said, customers come first, no one else is going to die on my watch. Out. Okay? And that's what I mean by culture. So Sunday family time, these are just two stories that struck with me, that struck me as being, you know, culture. I have a very good friend of mine, and I called him up and asked him for a meeting if we could meet over the weekend. I was soliciting him for a charity, a project that we were doing. And I said, you know, can we meet over the weekend? And he said, Sundays for families. Sundays for my family, I'm saying. Sundays for family. Now, may Hashem forgive me. As you remember last time, I have a little contrarian streak there. So I met one of his sons that week or the following week. And I naturally went over to him and said, what are your Sundays like? Okay, what's Sunday like at home? And he said it with the same tone as his father, with the same, you know, rhythm. He said, no, Sunday's the family. Okay, so that was the culture of his home. We're busy all week, Sunday we spent time together. Rabbi Wein's story was our next door neighbor. I live about a mile from Rabbi Berl Wein's former yeshiva, formerly headed by Rabbi Berl Wein, till he made Aliyah to Israel, at Eretz Israel, and our next door neighbor, their sons went to Shari Torah, and we had a foot and a half, 2 foot snowstorm. I was out shoveling with snow, and I see Itamar Frankenthal walking to yeshiva, and I say, where are you going? School's closed. So he looked at me, he said, Rabbi Wein said, Shari Torah never closes. What was the interesting part? Rabbi Wein had already made Aliyah 5 years earlier. He wasn't even in yeshiva together with Rabbi Wein. And Rabbi Wein told it to the Rabbeim, and whenever there was a snow day, it just became part of the DNA of the yeshiva, okay? And, you know, these are just two things. We do RV trips with our family. That's really part of our culture. And I had something, remember the light on, sir? Light it, sir. What?
Never forget.
What does it mean? Go ahead. Come on, Zara. Let's go. She did not see this presentation, folks.
I did not. Whenever my siblings and I were growing up, if we were out at night, we'd always see the light on outside the house. It meant that my father was waiting out for me, and we'd come and forget about the light. If we were out at night, my parents never stopped us from going out. They really trusted us. But my father was always on the couch waiting for us. And as many times we told him, go to bed, you don't have to wait for us, we'll be fine. He was always on the couch waiting for us to make sure we got home safe.
Thank you, Shiflin. It was also part of it. The other part of it was that I told the kids that light reminds you that this is a safe place and this is your place. You see the light, come home. It's a place where you can relax and be yourself. Thank you, Shiflin. Thank you for remembering. We did not rehearse this. So why did I spend so much time on this? Because I want to talk, that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. It's about having your children confide in you and seek your guidance when they need it most. But it will only work if it becomes a culture thing, that this is a value in our home. And the experts who study positive change and goal setting and planning typically use this template. Okay, I'll just use my cursor here. Our home will be, that's a goal. Our home will be a place where you just fill that in. because you say a reason, why is this reason important? And therefore, I or we will do the following. So this is what a goal looks like. Okay, I'm going to, it could be a personal goal, I'm gonna try to walk 3 miles a day because it's good for my health. Therefore, I'm gonna return phone calls between 2 and 3 o'clock and go for a walk then. And so that's what it looks like. So these are the three goals. I will, this is what we wanna do, because why is it important, and therefore what we do. And this is the Yankee. I tell you, most of the things are either research-based or I'll quote something. This is my own thought, but it hit me a few years ago that one thing that this doesn't discuss is what is the cost? What's it going to cost you to do this goal that you'd like to have? Now, for my friend that has a goal that Sunday is family time, that's going to cost him that he's going to have to turn down business meetings on Sundays. Okay, so that might cost him some money. It might cost him, you know, some friends of his want to go golfing for the day, and he'll say, no, I'm with my family. That'll cost him some pleasurable time. So this is a Yankee. In addition to the things that the experts say, those three things, I often think about it in terms of what is the cost and are you willing to pay it? And let's come up with an example here, okay? Our home will be a place where our teens and teens feel comfortable hanging out. Why? Because we'll be able to parent them better. We'll know who their friends are. We'd rather not have to worry where they are. And we don't want them getting into trouble, okay? This is something I just constructed, but it's something that I really encourage you to do this as families. You know, if you're a single parent, I stand and salute your courage, and Hashem should give you mazel and bracha. If you're married, sit down and do it together and talk about what do you want? We started at the beginning about the Ofrav. This is where it starts. It starts at having these conversations and thinking about what the goal is. Now, therefore, what are we going to do about it? Now, if you want your kids to be, let's again, this is not my goal, I suggested this. If you'd like this to be a goal of yours, then I suggest you think about it, articulate which one of these four reasons, or maybe all of them, maybe you have more of your own, and what are we doing about it, and where's the cost? I think it's an incredibly valuable, it's a very valuable goal, an important goal. It was one of the goals my wife and I tried to set when we were raising our children. I'll never forget, I was meeting with the parent. Unfortunately, he was having terrible problems with one of the teenagers. And our son, Shlomi, had come home from yeshiva. I used to have the New York Times every day, and he would read the sports section when he came home. So my back porch, where I do the talks usually, you can look in to our family room. And our son, Shlomi, was like spread in two different time zones. Right? Just like, you know, he was like relaxed, and the paper was all over the place. And he just looked like he was chilling, and this was his, you know, like he owned the place, which he probably felt that he did. And I told him, I said, you see that? I said, when you get, you know, he was complaining and fearful about what his son was doing, rightfully so. I said, try to forget about the bad friends and anything else you're worried about. Concentrate on that. Try to make your child comfortable at home more than anything else. And that, I'm not saying all the problems will go away. They don't. But I think it's an important value. But here's the question. Let's go through this. Chesky, can you open up the chat, please? So here's the question, Chesky, do I have to open my chat or just I see it automatically?
So you're going to have to open up your chat. I don't have access to it.
You don't have access to my chat?
Yeah, but it was there last time we were here.
Why isn't it? I think it was. We had everybody else has turned up. Can you send the chat for a second, Chesky, please?
Say it again.
Can you send me a chat, please? Is the chat enabled for our group?
I'm checking.
Thank you, Chesky, you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
folks, if we can't do it, well, I'll just go on and guess what you're going to say, or Chesky will enable some any of you to talk.
Yeah, Rabbi Horowitz, for some reason, it needs to be from your end.
Okay, I see it here. I got it. Okay, so I just turned it on, and do I have to refresh it?
Maybe refresh it. I don't see it yet.
Okay, 1 second, please. I really would like to do this because we're going to do this a second time. I'd like us to have, are we enabled now?
Give me 1 second. I'm going to try to work some magic here.
Sorry to keep you waiting, folks. All right.
I don't see it.
Let's do a manual, Chesky, if we can do a quick round robin, okay? So let's go back to our question again. Our question is, what are the costs associated with that goal? I'll start you off, okay? I started you off already. So again, the question is, having a home where tweens and teens feel comfortable hanging out will cost money. Why? Because you're gonna have to supply your kids with food. And you're gonna have to supply their friends with food. That's a lot of money. What else is it gonna cost you? Let's go. Can we do this, folks? Anybody? Raise a hand. Let's try to do this quickly if we can. Anyone, folks? What else is it gonna cost you?
Yep, we have a hand.
Go.
Josh. Or
Josh. Yeah. So
what's it gonna cost you, Josh?
It'll definitely cost you, let's say if you want to have more quiet time. So if you have your kids around more, so then that means less of your own private quiet time.
Serenity, good. It's going to cost you your serenity. Very good. So it'll cost you money and it'll cost you serenity because now, you know, it's going to sound like a freight train is going through all day and most of the night. Okay, go ahead. Anybody else?
Yeah, we have Shira. Unmute yourself.
Oh. Hi. I was going to say time.
Time for, because?
Just putting in a lot of time to make sure that they have what they need, that you're around for them.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. Yeah. And the time also that you have to be there now, right? You know, that's going to also, when the kids are off from school and they're hanging around, you can't leave three teenagers in your house if you value
my kids. We have a pool. We live in Florida. My kids like to night swim with their friends.
There
so tonight
go.
We actually, for the first time this week, said no, and not everybody was so happy with us. But I just was like, I had this class, and that's
but
it.
You're entitled to your own time. Yeah. But in other words, you made a decision that tonight you're not going to do it, but if the default position is that you do it, that means that it's a tremendous investment of time. Okay, so we have money, serenity, time. Let's do one or two more.
David.
Go.
David, you there?
Yes, I just unmuted me. I was going to say time, but also having to choose between who can do it. Can't have six kids with six different groups all over at the same time.
Okay, so you have to coordinate, right? That's more time and effort, right? You have to coordinate to see who's coming to the pool or who's coming to use the family room. Okay, great. One or two more?
Yeah, we have Aviva.
Go ahead, Aviva. Oh, yes. Aviva, or that really Aviva?
No, it's the real Aviva. No, I think you have to exercise restraint. You know, the ability to kind of hold back from, you know, sharing what you may be feeling.
Because you're going to make everybody uncomfortable. So it's going to cost you.
It's going to cost
you the liberty of expressing yourself, right?
It's exactly.
You're going to have to spend a lot of self-control on this. Okay, exactly. We have one more.
One more. Gail Feinstein.
Please.
Yeah, I'm thinking something like
love this. Go.
Loss of feeling of in control, because if I'm going to let them have their expression and everything, I'm not going to, it's exactly. Not just going to be exactly the way I want it.
It's not going to be, and one of the things that you also say is if you want to keep your children, and a corollary of that would be, thank you so much, Chesky. We'll mute everyone again. Thanks a million. So a corollary of that would be your standards. Because if you say we're not having X, Y, or Z in our home, the children are going to go off to a house that does have it. And that's not a simple decision. That might be harder than money and time and serenity. That you have to make a decision on what your standards are going to be in the house and what's in and what's out. So all of these things factor into your decision making. And this is when I said previously that we have an issue of cost, this is expensive, right? This is an expensive thing. What you want to have this goal because it's important because of those four reasons, you're going to have to pay for it. And when we get to hours now that we're talking about, okay, so here's where the rubber meets the road for us tonight. And this is what we've been building up to. If you want to mentor your tweens and teens, if you don't just want to be a supervisor, if you really want to mentor them, one of your goals will be or should be, or you might want to think about, that our home will be a place where our tweens and teens can talk to us about anything. And if you set that up as a goal, there's a cost for that too. We'll talk about that. So I'm encouraging you to get into this frame of mind. First of all, obviously, you know, all of these talks, I really been spending a lot of time trying to make the best use of our time together and to walk you through these things. So we start off with the notion of that homes do have culture, a certain culture, a feel, a flavor to them. Examples of that, some goals that you might have as a culture, and this one tonight, if you want to guide your children, how can you guide them if they can't talk to you? Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal, the legendary Rav of the German Kehillah, the Yekesha Kehillah in Frankfurt, you know, in America, in Washington Heights, he said that that the Torah describes the first time the word Reya is used, friend, is it says that when Yehuda sinned, when Yehuda did it with Tamar, he had some possessions, long story not for now, but he was basically comfortable confiding in this person. So it says he turned these things over, the yad, in the hand of Re'ehu, his friend, Ha'adulami. So Rav Schwab says that the Torah was telling us that a friend is someone you can tell anything to, something you're embarrassed of, something you're not comfortable with, something that you don't know what to do about. And Yehuda was in a position and he confided in him. And that's not that we were supposed to be friends to our children, but it means to have a certain comfort level. I put that asterisk in, that's Yankee, the white on bottom. That's my own, that's not Rav Schwab, didn't say that, but I'm adding to what Rav Schwab said, is that it wasn't the family member. He probably was more comfortable confiding in someone outside his family because he doesn't have to see them again. And, you know, he doesn't have to interact with them daily. It's much more embarrassing, which is another challenge of ours. Let's be honest. If you want your kids to talk to you, they're going to see you a lot. So factor that in, that what Rav Schwab said, very often it is easier talking to someone else. We'll go through research now. I'm going to walk you through some things again, just like I did with the other research. I want to show you that it's there, that it's not only a thought and a feeling and a hunch, or even experiences that I've had over 40 years of dealing with teenagers, but that there's in fact research that supports this. And again, I really encourage you, take the time, you can watch it on YouTube afterwards, stop, you know, pause it and look up. This was Dr. Aviva Goldstein put this together with I love the way she did it with the Venn diagram. And there are five research studies that I'm gonna give, five different slides. I'll give you very bekitzer in short form and then move on. But that when parents, number one, I'm following the cursor here, okay? Validation, empathy, no freaking out, meaning that parents that can take negative news that upsets them and a child comes and tells them that they're having a problem with something, and not as difficult as it is for us, one of you mentioned, right, that one of the things if you have your kids around is that you have to have more self-control. The parents that don't freak out, kids are more likely to talk to. Why are we laughing, Sarah? You want to say something? Go ahead, come on. Sarah wants... Well, the things that you're more comfortable talking to her about.
Yes. My father has a tendency to stay very, very calm. So if there was ever anything I needed to talk about...
Speak up a little, sweetheart.
Sure. If there was ever anything I needed to talk about, it was usually with this one, just because I knew that he'd be calmer when I when I broached the subject, then.
Andy, well, many, many or most things, she has the most amazing mother in the world. And many or most things, Sarah was more comfortable talking to Odia, to my wife about. But, and we'll talk later about some barriers. One of the barriers that we have, I'll give you an advance notice because we're gonna be talking about those barriers. One of the things that come up there is you have the question of confidentiality. Are the parents, if I tell my parents, are they gonna tell someone? We made a rule in our home, and again, just because Sarah mentioned it, thanks, Mika, thank you for saying it. We had a rule at home that the children we told them, we want you to tell us if something's going on, even if it's gonna upset us. But you can tell one of us, we never keep, we told you, mommy and I don't keep secrets from each other, but you feel free to tell one of us. And if you ask us not to tell the other, we'll keep your confidentiality, even though we're violating a principle of ours by keeping secrets from our spouse. That my wife and I decided to do that with the children. And that's what Sarah was really referring to, that she was comfortable talking to me knowing that I would keep it quiet, even though, again, that's not something that my wife and I did, but we talked it over together and we made an exception. Again, these are, when I said have conversations about it, these are the types of conversations that are helpful in achieving these goals. Thank you, Shiflin. Okay, so these are so open the closest relationships, and meaning that confiding and seeking someone's guidance and help doesn't come out of the clear blue sky. You gotta put some time in. And in fact, this one together, look, time together as a family dynamic, even family time, spending, as my friend would say, Sundays for family. Families that are a cohesive unit are more likely to talk if they're open and flexible, meaning that the parents are flexible, that they don't have a preconceived notion of which box each child has to fit in, that those types of parents are more likely to get feedback from the children, and a tremendous level of trust, okay? Trust, obligation, acceptance. So these are the five, qualities that research shows, are more likely to get that type of feedback from your children. So we're gonna go through these slides again. As I said, feel free to look them up later. On the left-
Hurt. We have a question.
Please, go ahead.
Shira?
Hi, I'm sorry to interrupt in the middle. I'm just wondering if you're gonna discuss how to address big, scary things that they might share with you.
Like abuse or something like that.
Or anything like related to, any kind of behaviors or thoughts or anything that you, that are a big deal.
I'll take your question first. In fact, if you want to, I'll just get you ahead just for a moment. One of the things that I say is, you have a lot of questions at the end. This raises so many questions. You see that? Okay. So we'll get to that later, but that's okay. The idea behind it. I'm glad you're thinking in those terms, because that's really right. That's where the rubber meets the road. What happens if they tell us something that's really frightening to us? What happens if they tell us? There are so many variables of that. I'll take your question first, if you'd like to address it when we open. Okay. Thank you for speaking up, and I'm glad you brought it up. Okay. So on the left side, these are listed as the research, they viewed adolescents. And on the right side, I asked Dr. Goldstein to write Loshon B'nei Adam, as we say in the Gemara, layman's terms. Teens open when they trust their parents and they feel sort of obligated to share because the parents made them feel that way. That means if I tell Sarah, look, sweetheart, anything that happens, if my wife and I, whatever's going on in your life, we wanna know, even if it's going to upset us, they feel accepted and they feel almost obligated to share, not in a bad way, but they say, look, my parents want to hear about this, so it's something I should do, okay? They behave more safely in families that spend time together. Teen behavior doesn't happen in a vacuum, but it's the family dynamic. Again, if you look on the bottom here, there's research here, and you can just Google it and look it up if you want to know a little bit more about it. Teens open to their parents when the teens see them as being good communicators. Family feels close, and the teens themselves feel good about the relations with the family members. They share more when they say they're open-minded and flexible. Remember we had last week, Thursday, we did the authoritarian and authoritative. So if people are rigid and closed-minded and I'm the boss, listen to me because I said so, the kids are less likely to talk to them, which is logical. And this was a study done specifically with young ladies that spoke to their mothers when they validated, understood, they empathized, and the ones who didn't were you know, the ones who didn't. So this is just a chazar, a review of those five. So again, it's perfectly logical. Nice to know that there's research that actually supports this. Two more things, and then we're gonna get into another exercise, and then we'll open up for questions. This is called a runaway truck ram, okay? I forgot the young lady that just spoke, asked this question a couple of minutes ago. Was not Aviva, Aviva asked earlier.
Shira.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks, Sarah. Okay, write me a little crib sheet here. Yeah. Okay, so the Shira's question about when something comes that's really bad, Shira, I prepared this one before we spoke. If you look at, if you go to, you know, to Aspen or Vail or places where there's ski slopes and all of that, and they're very steep mountains, they have a thing called a runaway truck ramp. And that is that a car weighs, you know, a couple thousand pounds, the brakes are enough to stop it. Truck weighs, fully loaded, weighs 50,000, 80,000 pounds. Those thin little brakes are not gonna do it. That's why if you see the signs, you know, they should go into low gear when they go down hills, because if they're in high gear and they get to a certain speed, their brakes rub out in a second, and literally it's a runaway truck and it's just a disaster. So they have these cute things that they build into the mountain, like a ramp going up. Some of them have like very steep bumps in it. And the truck basically expends that energy that's flying down the hill with those cars and stops them. I like to think that I'm a visual learner. I'm gonna be talking about learning personalities later in the later session. But I think of this process. Shira, thanks Sarah. What Shira mentioned, exactly Shira, this is what we're talking about. That having this relationship with your children is the runaway truck ramp. When things get out of control in their life, you're providing them with such a gift. Just come and talk to me. We can talk about this. Let's stop the bleeding, you know, stop the chaos or the fear or this feeling that you, that's how we feel when we're getting into trouble, you know, that we're just out of control and flying down the hill, and an available parent really is like, you know, is a truck ramp. This is something that I just wrote a few years ago in the Times of Israel. I've been well over 20 years, I've been writing and lecturing every single Purim about not drinking and that adults shouldn't be giving alcohol to kids and all of that. And then for the first year I said, you know, I'm leaving something out of the equation. I said to myself, and I believe I wrote this the morning of, like the day, it just hit me. And I wrote this, again, you can go back and look it up. You can do a Google search for Times of Israel. And there's actually a video there where I talk about it. And what I realized is that that's the perfect world. That's what parents are supposed to say. What happens if their kid gets drunk? So I encouraged parents, for 20 years, I've been pleading with parents not to give alcohol to children. In the video, you know, I asked them to be compassionate, but if the kids are out and drunk, I ask parents to provide them with a no questions asked pickup. That means, despite the fact that I told you not to drink and you didn't listen to me, and the fact that you're picking up your phone and you're notifying me lets me know that you didn't listen to me, I still want you to call me. I'll pick you up. No questions asked. So this is sort of this balance between you giving them guidance. Look on top here, I wrote here that, you know, so often teens get into far greater danger after getting drunk. They get a ride home with someone who's drunk. They hang out for hours until the alcohol wears off. Kids literally die because of they're afraid of the parents' reaction. So this is the balance. I ended off that video by saying, you know what you're really saying? I maybe wrote an article.
It hurts. I have another question.
Yes. Let me finish that thought, please. Thank you. Your life matters more than our rules. It means you're telling each other, look, these are our rules. We don't want you drinking. We're going to really be upset if you drink. And if you drink, we're going to talk about it. But if you choose not to listen, we love you. And your life is more important than the rules that we set. And again, this is all part of a balance of how to navigate this situation where you encourage your children to talk. You know what, Chesky, I'm gonna ask whoever, she's second. I told Shira, going first. So whoever asked, unless it's something that it was absolutely not clear, then feel free to go.
No, it's just, I think this issue brings up the point, which I'll just, maybe I'll throw out the question and maybe you'll answer it when you answer Shira's, because I think they're related, is sort of, doesn't it diminish your message a little bit when you're saying, I want you to do the right thing. I don't want you to get drunk. But if you don't listen to me, then I'll still be there. So it's sort of like, you know, it's almost like you're giving the kid an out to kind of say, oh, well, I can get away with this.
Right. So that goes back to the authoritarian and authoritative that we spoke about last on Thursday. That meaning that if you and this is important. This is why, you know, when things like this come up, it's fine to talk about it because it explains what we're talking about. You might make the point that if the kids are terrified of their parents, they might not. Might be less likely to get drunk. But if they do get drunk, and we learned the first talk, we said that, you know, adolescence is about not having, you know, that frontal lobe and not having the executive, you know, the functioning is weak, and they're going to make mistakes. What happens then? If they're terrified of you, they're going to stay out all night. You want them in the street for 4 hours, for 8 hours? You want them sleeping, you know, throwing up? And on somebody's lawn, and God forbid, being open to being taken, really be abused or worse. So that's a choice you have to make. I agree with you, Yanina. It's not simple. This is not a simple answer. I propose to you that you're telling them that there really is that there's a balance here, and that we want you to listen, but if you don't, you can still tell us your life. Please, by all means, your life matters. That's why I wrote this, Yanina. That's why I wrote this, because I have a hand next to me. Chesky, this one didn't go through you, all right? So this is so important, Yanina. What we're saying is your life matters more than our rules. And I think it's really such a wonderful thing to tell your children. Are your children, you know, in my experience, and this might be contrary to what you believe in or agree with or raised this way, I found that when kids don't get into trouble, it's much more likely because they don't want to disappoint their parents rather than they're afraid of them. That's a very important, I did not put it in this presentation, but over the years dealing with thousands and thousands of kids, what's most likely to happen is that they say, you know, I don't want to disappoint. Oh, I did not mean, go ahead, Sarah. Take it away.
Just wanted to say, as a kid who was raised by my father and mother, who are incredible, I'm saying this from my own personal experience. If you raise your children, and he didn't read this, it says the word, I wrote this down as he was talking, I wrote disappointing. If you raise your kids as authoritative and not authoritarian, and you really explain to them as they're growing up, and you take the time and you express your thoughts instead of just giving them rules. At the end of the day, if my father had ever given me that speech, I'll be really disappointed in you if you drink, but if you drink, we'll talk about it afterward, but call me. The fear of disappointing him alone would have stopped me from doing anything that he wouldn't have been happy about. So I don't know if this, obviously this isn't the case for everybody, but for the most part, I really think that the beginning portion of that, of the warning, is enough to stop anything from happening further.
Thank you, sweetheart. Can I tell them the Purim story?
Please.
This is with permission. I asked you beforehand, didn't I? Oh, come on back. So let me tell you what it really looks like. Yanina was the name?
Yeah, Yanina.
Yanina. I'm speaking to you and to everybody, but this is, I actually asked Sarah permission before we went on, if I could mention, I was just double checking now. One of the things that if you believe that adolescence is a time for people to grow from their mistakes, and we're going to be talking about this in a later talk in greater detail, but sometimes it means that you let children exercise the bechira, their choice, even if you know they're going to, might be making a poor choice. You provide, it's called scaffolding, to protect them so that, from real harm, but sometimes they just, some lessons they need to learn on their own. Here's another way of thinking about it, and you're gonna hear this later in a couple of days, in a couple of sessions. You have an eight, Sarah's our third daughter, she's our youngest. So by the time she went off to Israel, we already knew that we had sent two daughters to Israel. And we know that we did a checking out and we picked a good school and it had supervision. But what? I mean, I know that I'm not finished. But you know, I know the story. I'm building to this. So you know that the kids are 6,000 miles away and they can do whatever they want and you'll never know. Now, Sarah's 15 years old or 14 years old. I know because we had two other girls that's the way it is and that's the way life is. You know, the first kid is the challenging one because you don't really know the rules of the road yet. Now, Sarah's 14 years old. How are we preparing her to make good choices at 18 when we're not there? And if everything is forbidden until then, so what more seichel is she gonna get from June when she graduates to 2 months later getting on the plane?
I'm also an oppositional kid. Like I'm not a vanilla kid that listens to everybody. That. My nature is very oppositional. So.
Like her father. Remember I told you at the end of the first session that one of our children, I would say, don't clean up your room. That's my baby. Okay, so again, the Purim story goes like this. Sarah came to us when she was 15 and she asked if she can go to a Purim party. Now, I know pretty well what's going on in town, and the home that the party was in, we were not really comfortable.
I didn't know what would happen at first.
She didn't know that it was a crazy place. I checked up the Rishonim, the commentaries, and the Poskim and all of that. I didn't see any custom on Purim that a minhag, a custom that you have to have strobe lights. That's not part of the rules for Purim. And it was a wild party. She asked to go. My wife and I talked it over. And I told her, I said, you can go, sweetheart, you can go, but you have to have one of three parents. I picked three parents from her classmates. Show me, remember? I said, one of three parents who get it and who can take care of themselves have to be there to supervise the entire time. I said, I would go, but because of my work with teenagers, it's like inviting the Malach HaMavis to a party. You know, right? If I walk in there, you know, she'd be embarrassed and I'd go, oh, Horowitz is here, right? So I didn't want to go myself because I felt bad for her that she's Rabbi Horowitz's daughter. She shouldn't have to deal with that. But I want her to have a safe person. So one of her friends, she remembered who it was. I just asked her if she remembered. And I said, you have to be there the whole time. You have to have your phone and text me when you feel, if you feel you don't belong there anymore. Anyway, we went home. My heart was in my throat. And, because I knew what was going on there. All of a sudden I got a text like now with like 10 exclamation points. I went to pick her up and I didn't say a word, not one word in the car. I didn't say anything. She was shaking. She was frightened. Some guys were drunk and they started, you know, really acting inappropriately and stuff. And I still remember like I was dressed because I was expecting to go out. She came home. I got into sweats. It was for a night. And I just sat on the couch downstairs. I don't know if you remember that part. She came downstairs and she said, Tati, why did you let me go? Remember that? She said, Tati, why did you let me go? You knew what was going on there. Remember what I said? Something like that. I said, what would you have learned if I told you no? You would say, I'm the last one in the family. I have these middle-aged ogre parents who just stay up day and night thinking of how to make my life miserable. And, you know, my wife and I made a decision to let her go, even though we were concerned, because we felt that she would learn lessons. And again, I would not have let her go if she didn't have protection from this parent. So it doesn't mean you just willy-nilly let them do crazy things, but some experiences they just have to learn by themselves. Let me finish. So let's just finish the talk and then we'll open formally to questions if anybody, you know, wants to go. So if you want to really mentor your kids, I think one of the goals, we're going to take questions soon. Nice having you here. So if you want to mentor your kids, one of the goals should be that our, again, I recommend that this is, that our home is a place where kids can talk to us about anything. And let's just do this one more time. Pesky, you're back in business.
All right.
So let's think about the barriers and then we're done for the night. So let's think about the barriers. Why would a teenager not tell their parents that they have a drinking problem? Or that some friends of theirs are boosting cars or getting into trouble or whatever. They have a, you know, their younger kids, they're vaping or whatever it is. Why would they not, or worse, why would they not tell their parents that they're getting into trouble? Go. Shira?
They're embarrassed.
They're embarrassed, good. Number two, so they're afraid of punishment. I'm sorry, I didn't say it. I started you off. They're afraid of punishment, they're embarrassed. Go ahead.
We have, you're on mute.
Go ahead.
Say, Levine?
It's April, yeah. Fear of disappointment.
Fear of disappointment, good. They don't want to disappoint us, right? They don't want to disappoint us. Especially Sarah. Go ahead.
They're very shy tonight.
Okay. I saw it's the second hand. I thought two hands are up. Okay. Let's just move on. Anybody else? I'll be glad to wait. Okay. So, you know, typically, I see another hand.
Oh, another hand.
David, go.
And then, that they're afraid you'll tell the friend's parents.
Right.
You won't keep them socially.
Right, you don't keep the confidentiality, and that's a whole thing. It's a real deal, right? That they can, you're not going to keep. Good, excellent.
We got Josh.
Go, Josh.
I just have to give my wife credit because it was her idea. But then, perhaps your parents don't let you hang out with those kids anymore, and you really want to hang out with them.
What did you say, Josh? I'm sorry.
I said that perhaps if you tell your parents, so then you'll be afraid that your parents won't let you hang out with those kids anymore.
Great, right? Now they're going to change their practice.
Make it more difficult.
You'll make it more difficult. You're going to ground me until I'm 80 and bring in both parents, right? That life is going to change. The life I had until now is not going to exist anymore once I tell you that I have a drinking problem, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Well, you watch me at parties. You're going to watch me here. You're going to, you know, but okay. So life is going to change. Okay. We got some important ones. Anybody else? So we'll just go. Okay. So these are real barriers. And I propose to you that these barriers are important, and you have to overcome each of them. And it's really as complicated and as simple as that. And the questions that I brought Sarah for was really about how does this look? What does it look like? The question Yanine asked: What happens? Does that mean that you're just rolling over and you're not a parent anymore? So you're afraid of punishment. You don't want to disappoint them. They're embarrassed. They don't want to change their life all of a sudden over time. So, look, you're welcome to deal with this any way you want. This is Yankee. This isn't the research part. But I think you just have to address them. They're afraid of punishment. So you tell them, look, if you talk to us about something, we'll talk about it. We're not going to give you a typical punishment. We might get intervention for you. We might ask you to go for therapy. We'll go along with you if it's helpful to you. But so again, what Josh said about, you know, about having a about life changing, life might change, but it's not going to be in a disciplinary way. It's just because we want to help you, and we're going to work with you on that. I mean, it's such a good news. We're gonna, if you're having a drinking problem, you know, Mom and I like having a glass of wine after dinner. We're going to cut down because we know it's hard for you. We're going to put some skin in the game. So you're afraid of punishment. We're not going to punish you. You're embarrassed. That's a hard one. Tell your kids. We told this to our children all the time. If anything's going on in your life, we want to know about it, even if it's going to upset us. They're going to be disappointed. Show them the research about frontal lobes. Explain.
Your told us we'd never be punished.
I told him he'd never be punished. Well, that's the first one, right? I tell him he'd never be punished, right? I told the kids, that Sarah was saying, I told the kids that they would never be punished for anything they told us. We told the kids. Okay, what else we disappointing? The confidentiality, we spoke about with my wife and I, how we dealt with it, that Sarah wouldn't be comfortable talking to me about certain things if she knew my wife would know. So we made a tough decision to respect confidentiality, even in my, we didn't cheat, by the way, never lie to your kids. We told the kids we're not talking, we never ever spoke about it, ever. You know, and some of those, you know, some of those confidentiality issues, you might want to say if someone's life is in danger, we're going to say something. We're not going to sit by and let somebody die because of confidentiality, but we will discuss anything with you before we tell anyone. Sometimes you need to tell people. So like, again, if this is a goal, know that it's going to cost this price. You know, you get, this is not cheap. But I think it's perhaps the most important thing that you could really do for your kids. So going back to this, going back to the model that we used before, our home will be, again, not my goal, if you want this goal, a place where our kids can talk to us. Why? Because it will make our relationship closer. It'll help their personal safety. It's the only way we can guide them through the mistakes. And the personal, so when I mentioned about the off-ramp, so when children are being chas v'shalom really sexually abused or cyberbullied or bullied, including a very high-profile case recently, where a very prominent school that really did the talk about culture, they really did the right thing. There was an assistant principal that was caught soliciting pictures, you know, from students of his, and the kid, it stopped because a 15-year-old kid spoke to his parents. Folks, here's where the rubber meets the road. Ask yourself, what did those parents, I did not speak to the parents, but I would love to have, I would love to find out how they got their kids. They basically, the kid had to say that, you know, mom, dad, I was exchanging pictures, you know, with this girl that I turned out to be a fake, you know, was a fake. So it was a terribly uncomfortable conversation. The kid had it with his parents, okay? So therefore, I'll overcome the barriers that make the kids reluctant to talk. And those are the barriers that we spoke about before when we talked about this concept of discussing barriers. And now, once you're opening up to that, is where Sarah comes in, you know, because it's such, again, especially if you're raising your children, if you were not raised like this, and I was not raised like this at all. You know, my parents were European. I love them dearly. I miss them more than I can say. But, you know, they ran things, you know, children, you know, didn't, it was, I wouldn't say they were authoritarian, but it was certainly more, they didn't do timeouts, you know, didn't do all of this stuff. We wouldn't have been comfortable telling them stuff. So there's an exchange for that. You make a decision as parents how you want to run this. So here's your questions. I'll throw out some to you. You know, come on, does this ever happen? Did he really talk to you? Does that mean it's okay? You just asked that. Are there no consequences? How will they ever learn? Many other questions. If you want, Sarah's here. You can address questions to me or to Sarah. You know, the customer or the store owner here, and what it looks like in crafting a set of house rules that develops this type of culture where your children feel comfortable talking to you. And again, it is so contrary to everything that someone would be comfortable doing. You're really asking the kids to go so far out of their comfort zone. Let's go. Fire away, guys. Anybody, feel free, you know, I'll be delighted to take
questions. I have a question for Sarah.
No, Chesky. He's a high school teacher, just for the record.
First of all, it's so brave of you to join. Thank you. Growing up with a father like Rabbi Horowitz, who's like so influential, so involved in kids at risk, like, how was it for you growing up? Like, was it hard for you? Like, did that make things easier for you as a teenager or a child? Did you, like, how did you navigate your own feelings? Was it more pressure on you to, like, to be a certain, do you feel like to be a role model for other people? How is it for you?
That's a great question. I can't even tell you how many people have asked me that in my life. I can't tell you, I mean, a lot of people tell me I'm not like a rabbi's daughter. I don't know what that means, but you know, when I was dating, every single guy that I dated said that they were shocked that I was a rabbi's daughter. And any guy who made any negative kind of comment, I immediately said no, because my father, my mother, the work that they've done, I couldn't be prouder. You know, I've been writing notes since my father started this. And, you know, when he did "Our Home Was dot, 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 and your kids, what do you want your kids to insert here?" I wrote "light." I don't know how to explain it, but everything about that word is what I think about my childhood. It was open. It was accepting. It was never serious. My father always left his painful, gut-wrenching work in the office, in the school, whatever it was. They were so accepting and so open, and that's so hard. You know, my family, I think, covers the spectrum of I don't know how you, of Yiddishkeit. We're just all different. None of us are exactly the same. And I think that that's a huge testament to who my parents are, that we all felt comfortable being ourselves. It was so freeing. I just felt free as a kid. I could be myself. And, you know, I actually was in school last year with, I ran into somebody last year who was a principal of mine at one point. And she, I don't know if I even told you this, she told me, she saw me and she said, "Would your father be disappointed if he saw you like this?" And I looked at her and I said, "My father couldn't be prouder of me, but not because of what I wear. He doesn't care what I wear. He cares about my neshama and who I am." And I didn't hesitate. I know my father and I know what he cares about. And he made that evident in everything that he did. And I think it doesn't matter what a person does with their, you know, whether you're in chinuch, whether you're working, if you give those values over to your kids and you let them know that you appreciate who they are, they'll always feel that. They'll always know that. And they'll always come back.
Wow. I heard
if I can jump in, I didn't want to interrupt it. It was really beautiful, sweetheart. Thank you. I just want to tell you Sarah's our youngest. There's an 8-year spread between her and our older 4 children. In fact, that she grew up, if you're wondering how she's so poised and all of that, she was like, she used to sit around at 6 and 8 or whatever it was, discussing the kids' dates, you know, and all of that. But the older children, when I started doing parenting classes, I really did. I asked, our oldest is 40, can I have 39? My wife and I, Bezhinden and Svansik, we're having our 40th anniversary soon, Baruch Hashem. I asked our 4 children, our older children, Chesky, for permission before I started doing parenting classes. And I said, "I'm asking you because I want you to be able to misbehave like anybody else. And I don't want you to have to put up with, oh, Rabbi Horowitz's son, the daughter did this and this and this." I said, "First of all, you're not Rabbi Horowitz's son, you're your own person. And tell anybody, just close them down if they say that." But I actually asked them for permission and I was ready for no. I would not have done it if they would have felt uncomfortable. But thank you. Go ahead, folks.
Wow. Anybody? Thank you so much. We have Rachel Wasser. Let me unmute her. You're unmuted.
Okay, hi. Hi, thank you. Yeah. I wanted to know, Rabbi Horowitz, how do you prepare yourself to be calm and even tempered when your children share with you news that's uncomfortable for you? You spoke about not going on an emotional roller coaster ride. How do you prepare for that?
Nothing in life prepares you for certain things, okay? Let me tell you this. Nothing in your past prepare. I always say nothing prepares you in your life for sending off a daughter to Israel and sitting there by the security gate, you know, and saying goodbye, you know, Nothing in life prepares you for that. And nothing in life prepares you for having to deal with the messy stuff. And the people who are oblivious, ay, Baruch Hashem, everything is fine, you know, they don't know what's going on. Clueless parents sleep better at night, folks. Okay? Take that to the bank. Okay? Clueless parents, the parents who don't know what's going on, they sleep, ay, Baruch Hashem, such nachas. They should have nachas, it's beautiful. But, you know, so it's a value judgment. You have to decide if you want to listen. How do you prepare yourself? You really can't. And look, my wife, truthfully, is not. Because I do what I do, like I don't get frightened that he's in my bar to entry for getting scared is a little bit higher, or I wouldn't be around. You know, I wouldn't have made it. But I'm saying it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to feel like you're not prepared. Because you're not prepared. You know, life didn't prepare you for this stuff. So you listen. It's okay if you tell them, look, and you know something? I believe in honesty. I think you should just tell your kids, I'm sorry if I seem rattled. I am very rattled by this, but I'm glad you told me. That's what I would tell you to say. You can't fool your children. You know, Mama, you upset that I told you? Of course I'm upset, sweetheart. But this is part of life, and we're gonna do this together. Okay, so that's really the message. So I don't have any simple solution for you how to manage to do this. You know, my stomach has like, you know, a lot of lead lining there, you know, that helps me get through the stuff. But be honest with yourself. And by the way, if you're married and your husband is better at this, just outsource it to him. And some mothers, it's not a guy thing. Some women are just better at this than their husbands.
We have Leo.
Hi. So how do you balance, like, even if you believe that teenage age is a time for kids to, like, figure, you know, make mistakes and learn from it, how do you balance that with, like, the some communities approach where they're really hard on teenagers? So even if you're okay with that as a parent, like, you want to make sure they don't get hurt by the system.
It's a very difficult question. I think I always marvel at, you'll forgive me, folks, I speak my mind. That's just the way I roll, so forgive me. I'm gonna be very honest. I marvel in amazement that people try to get their kids into these super selective schools that are basically hanging up a sign that if your kid does anything wrong in the next 4 years, we're gonna throw him out, or her. Like, why would you wanna go to a school like this? When someone says, Baruch Hashem, we only have this, that, you know, they didn't come with that. You know, either they don't let children in or they send them away. So I think one of the things when you pick, especially a high school, or even elementary school, especially if you have a child that has my nature, that's a contrarian. And so you, Shiggle. Okay, especially if you have someone that has my nature, that's a contrarian and you know, and needs to do their own thing. She has amazing, amazing, amazing values. Really, so I couldn't be more proud. But, you know, it's a nature. That's just the way it is. So I'm saying, if you have a child that you know is going to test the system, don't try to get them into yeshivas that have the best bachurim in Lakewood. You know, I don't mean Lakewood literally, but you know, I'm saying the schools that are, schools telegraph this. So like, you know, you're getting into a 4 year, it's like you're entering into a 4 year agreement in high school. In elementary school, it's 10 years. And imagine, like, the person tells you, when they say, we only take this, so, you know, we're makbid on this, and that, they're telling you, if you're a kid, they're going to throw you out. Like, why would you want to go there? So, like, it's not, whatever, you know, I'm not a, whatever, obviously, I'm not a big believer in that. But you do have to, it's true, people sometimes, you know, in my generation, we had more time to make mistakes. I always say that I would never get into it. The way I was at 13, I would not get into a single yeshiva the way it is today. And I think it's very sad. I said it at a good convention with 4,000 people in the room and my Etzes Gedolei Torah members there and hundreds of rabbis in the audience. I said, none of you would have taken, I was speaking about teens at risk, but none of you would have taken me in your yeshivas the way I was at 13. You ready to write me off? And I love the Rosh Yeshiva. They asked me to start Project Yes. Don't think it wasn't a rebellion thing. I just was making the point that sometimes kids need time. So I do think sometimes you need to sit down with your kids and you say, listen, and that might be a practical thing to do. You say, look, you know, we're tolerant at home and we're going to give you your space. You cannot do this in front of other people. And you know, save it for the house. Like you might want to coach your children. Look, you're going to get suspended from school if you don't stop this, whether it's dress code or whether it's other things or stuff. So just, you can advise them to be discreet about it and not to harm themselves. You can't blame, I always tell people, kids, you can't blame people for judging you on what you show them. You know, so it is a balance. It's not simple. Okay? Anyone else, folks?
It's pretty quiet now.
Shira, did I answer your question? Sarah's a big fan of yours, Shira. Is Shira around? She may have gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Folks, I hope you found this helpful. Anybody else? Go. Aviva's friend.
Shira?
Oh, 1 second.
Hi, I'm still here. I just couldn't unmute myself.
Yona, were you the one who wrote up the notes? One of our members, by the way, I sent an email today with a transcript of the first class. I sent an email. If you're not on my list, you might want to check your spam thing. Everybody who registered, I took your emails and sent. I've been sending you, calming attractions for what the talk's going to be about, and also a YouTube video of previous classes. And one of our friends here wrote up a transcript of the first class, which I thought was amazing. I put it in today's email. So it's a group email that's done by Constant Contact. So it might be in your spam box. So if you want to leave it there, that's fine. I don't get insulted that fast. It comes with a strong stomach. But if you do want to avail yourself of it, pull it out of the thing. Go ahead, please.
So Shira, you still want to go?
No. We asked. I'm sorry.
Hi. I think you answered all my questions. Thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, go. Yeah.
Yona.
Yona, it's Yona's wife. Yeah, go ahead. She's not unmuted. Wait, I'll get her. Wait, I got it.
I don't see her hand, so I don't know where she is.
I got it. Go. Okay, go. Yes.
Hi.
How you doing?
So you met my friend Aviva.
You bring a lot of spunk to the group here. On behalf of everyone, I just want to thank you both. I'm watching your husband carefully. He really was like egging me on to last time I go ahead.
I'm very good at that.
Go ahead. Be careful of the silent ones. Go ahead.
So I think that we have like a pretty chilled home. And I think that we're pretty like open-minded and like, you know, I think it's like a good vibe, but our 12 and 13-year-olds do not open up about things. Is that because, would you say that's because of their age, or would you say that we're not meeting all of those criteria, which is also possible because I do kind of, respond, like let's say on my daughter's, on my 13-year-old's chats, one of the girls had posted something really inappropriate. So on the mom's chat, I was like, okay, just FYI, if anyone's like not checking up on the phones, like, you know, sometimes there are things that go on that are, you know, you might want to check up on. So then it started like a whole thing on the mom's chat. But it was something that the moms needed to know about, and they needed to check their daughter's phone and see that, you know, and then the moms went and spoke to the daughters that like, okay, like, you know, this is what that meant, and this is what like was okay and wasn't okay. So I do like, you know, if there is something that I think is inappropriate, it's not something that happens like so frequently, but you know, I'm not like a wallflower.
But that's what we call parenting. You know, parenting doesn't mean that you become their friend or you don't say anything when they do something wrong. That's part of your responsibility. I'm saying you're supposed to tell you, that's your job. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And it's perfectly normal for the kids to push back and be upset about it, and well, get over it, it's fine.
But,
fine.
But she for sure wouldn't have come to me and said, this was on my chat, what does it mean? Is this, I'm scared by this.
It's just the nature. Some people talk, some people don't. I told you, I mean, we spoke about this last time or the first class. People are who they are. And you know, don't feel that you're failing if your child is a little more secretive or laid back. It may be who they are. Sometimes they parcel out little things and see how you're going to respond and do it accordingly. But, you know, as long, like you said, if your environment at home is, we said, chilled and relaxed and the kids feel comfortable in their own skin, then you're doing what you should be doing. And maybe they'll talk and maybe they won't. You want to say something?
Yeah, if I can, just for a second. I remember my supervisor at my internship actually saying that children in general, it's more important for them to feel safe than it is for them to feel loved. And I know that that's a shocking statement, but at the end of the day, they need to know that you're sending a consistent message. The kids whose parents don't really care and aren't involved and aren't stepping in to protect them, they don't feel secure in their home. And that causes a lot more damage than, they may be angry at you today. They may be annoyed for a week. And I'm not saying you, I'm saying in general, if a parent does something that a kid doesn't like, they may be annoyed for a week. But at the end of the day, they know that you're there to protect them. And that is a much more concrete and valuable thing for them to understand than, oh, my parents let me do whatever I want.
And if you study Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you might want to look at, you're familiar? You might want to look it up. Safety is a lower level than family. So that to quote what Zara said and her teacher said, it's what, I just want to jump in with next week, Thursday we're doing technology, but I just want to ask you, does your child know that you're checking up her phone?
Yes.
Or are you snooping?
No. It's an agreement. And
perfect. Great. Because when parents call me and they say, oh, I just happened to be looking at my daughter's phone and I saw this, what do you think I should do? I said, put it back in the drawer. Forget you saw it. And don't you ever dare do that again. Because, you know, I said, I always tell parents, there aren't many guarantees in life. But if you start a conversation with your kid saying, you know, I looked at you, and there is no and. The conversation will never be about what you want to talk about. Your child is correctly going to say, how dare you check up on me. So tell them that you're going to supervise them. I'm going to talk about it next week, about how to have this type of arrangement, you know, where you have supervision and
Can I just follow up on that 1 second? I imagine you might get into this in the next class, but does that then encourage, if the child knows that that's what you're doing, does that encourage them to just hide and delete? You know, it's very easy to get rid of things.
Possibly.
And really go behind your back.
Right. So that's why, and we're going to talk about this next week, that's why crafting house rules for phones is, it's not one size fits all. And there are variables in there which we'll talk about. If you have a child, I have a brother, if anybody lives in the Five Towns, I have a brother, his name is Rabbi Yehuda Horowitz. He's 2 years younger than I am. He's a mashkiach in the Sifta Teres Yaakov. He's, how would you describe him, sir?
Muhammad Babnik, a tzaddik.
Yeah. I don't know. She said, Alamed Vavnik, one of the 36 hidden tzaddikim, or, you know, a tzaddik, a malach, an angel. No one's ever accused me of that, folks. You know, we're as different but I always thank Hashem that he had to follow me around in school, not the other way around, you know? But I say, look, I'm going to talk about this next week. If you have a Rabbi Yehuda as a kid, you say, no phone. You can have a phone at 18. Okay, fine. That's it. That'll be it. If you have a Yankee, you know, 7, 8 years old, you're not safe. So all of this, we're going to really talk about it in depth, and I really want to give you some tools. I'm a big believer in doing this collaboratively with your children. So we'll talk about this next week, and I'm glad that you have an agreement with her and you told her that you're going to be checking. Do we have anyone else, Chesky?
Yeah, we have Sarah Leifer.
Go, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the talk.
I hope you're finding this helpful. I hope you are.
No, it's okay.
Can I be heard?
Yes, please go. Oh, yeah, are you?
Thank you. Okay, I want to know if my son comes to me with information that he wants to share with me, and it's not things that I approve of, but he's happy to share it with me. He'll share with me that he got a new flavor to vape. He'll share with me that he watched a certain movie that is the same actor as another movie, and it's not things that I want him to be doing or wanting him to be seeing, but he's obviously wanting something from me by sharing that information with me. And I don't know how to respond to that. I'm not really sure what my reaction should be.
So if the life is not in danger, vaping is a longer term thing. I'm not talking about, you know, doing cocaine. But I think it's beautiful that he wants to share his life with you. So maybe you don't need to, you know, respond. I don't think you need to, you know, give him a high five that he started, that he found a new vaping flavor. But you just listen, you know, you ask if something neutral, like, wow, is the taste different than the other one? Is there, you know, reason you like? Just make conversation. You know, it's, you'll find, all of you will find, in Mirza Shem, as you go through the journey and you do this, I call a kavod to you that your son is doing this. Really, it's a wonderful, wonderful sign that he's comfortable with you. And you know, you cash that in, you'll have a few cards of yours in your pocket for not responding. And when something really important comes up, you'll be able to say something and have some real currency. So I don't know necessarily that he's waiting for you to say anything wise or profound, but it's a conversation. He's not gonna talk to you about, you know, he's not gonna talk to you about the Gemara he learned in school or didn't learn in school or whatever, but conversation is always helpful. And I think I don't think you need to respond, you know, one way or the other. I gotta tell you, all the years that I was teaching, Josh, all the years that I was teaching, I never went to yeshiva without reading the sports section. You know that? One second, I'll unmute you, Josh. I really did. I used to make sure that I found out over the years that the kids really aren't interested in what I have to say. Yes, you sure that you want to say something?
Yeah, well, to that point, I would say for some reason, when I was in eighth grade in Rabbi Horowitz's class, everybody was very into having basketball jerseys, professional players' basketball jerseys. And I don't really think Rabbi Horowitz was really that interested or cared about Patrick Ewing or Michael Jordan, but he entertained us. He said, oh, you got this one, you got that one. Everybody was all excited. And the guys thought, you know, everybody's like, oh, Rabbi Horowitz is so cool. He takes us down to the gym to play basketball. He knows who these guys are. He's interested. He asks us about them. You know, he makes jokes about them, you know, with us. You know, it really enabled us to connect. But just one other point I wanted to make, and I know Rabbi Horowitz, you mentioned about saying how kind of like it's something you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth when you say, you know, I don't want you drinking, but if you're stuck or you're in trouble, call me to pick you up. So just, I guess, to give a little bit of context. So in my professional work, I work at a university, and one of my roles is, you know, when new students come, so I'm sitting there and telling them the policies, no drugs in the dorms, no alcohol in the dorms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then 5 minutes later, I'm explaining to them about something called an amnesty policy, where, yes, I just told you that you can't drink in the dorms and there will be consequences, and et cetera, et cetera, but we don't want you to get hurt. And if you are ever scared that you done something too much, you smoke too much, you think you're gonna, you drank too much, whatever it is, call. Or you don't want to get your roommate in trouble, you don't want to think you're not gonna get in trouble, your roommates are not gonna get in trouble, just call. We want you to be safe. That's the point. You know, it's not necessarily about the rules, it's about telling you, you know, there's a reason why there's a rule and there's gonna be a consequence, there'll be disciplinary procedures and stuff like that if you break the rule, but ultimately the bigger picture is that we want you to be safe.
That's great. That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing, Dash. Really appreciate it. Paul, go ahead, please. You're unmuted.
Thanks. Two questions. Thanks. Following up also on what Josh just said, but going back to your Purim thing of sort of the you know, no questions asked pickup policy, is there a follow-up the next day once everybody's settled down about what occurred? And or could there be a consequence from the behavior? So that's one question, and then, or two-part question. And then a separate question is, what obligation do you have as a parent whose child has come and told you to other parents, meaning their friends' parents, if they've shared something with you, you've digested it, but it somehow involves their friend, and what obligations do you have to their parents? And does it depend on what kind of relationship you have with those parents, if you know them, or they just
come from the school? Well, thank you for sharing both of them. I think in terms of the second one first, you know, your obligation to the other parents, it depends what your child told you, and it depends if someone's life is in danger. So if, let's say, they're texting on Shabbos, and your son tells you that he's doing it and 10 other friends are doing it, I'm not saying that's a small thing, but no one's life is in danger. So if your son says, look, I don't want anybody to know this, you got to keep it, you know, keep it to yourself, then that's your responsibility. Then that's a game changer. If your son says, look, a daughter says, look, I don't want you talking to anybody about it, you have to respect the confidentiality, unless someone's life is in danger. So even if you see them doing, you know, I've lost a lot of friendships over the years telling people what I thought they would want to hear, especially even people who ask me for advice. Sometimes I have to say my truth and going in knowing that that's the way it is. It doesn't always work. Not everybody will tell you, thank you, I'm glad you told me. They might feel offended. It depends on the personality of your friend, how close you are. But confidentiality is a deal breaker. Your first question was about, do you have a conversation the next day? I think I was pretty clear about that. I'm glad you asked me if I wasn't. When we set a rule with Sarah saying that we don't want you doing this or the other thing, and she tells us about it, that doesn't mean that there won't be, that things won't be different. She's expecting things to be different because
that
we know.
Comes back to the safe thing.
Right, it comes back to the safe. Right.
Following up, if a parent lays down a rule or something, a standard, something that they expect you to follow, and the kid breaks it, comes back to that safety thing. If a parent doesn't follow up with that consequence, then I think the kid would feel very okay in the moment. They may feel great they won, but the truth is deep down it sends a message of, oh, my parents aren't going to be there when I need them. They're not really going to follow through for me. I also want to say, I'm sorry for jumping in there, but I also want to say I think it's important to stress the difference. And you know, I'm young and I don't have kids this age yet but I think it's important, just from my perspective of being raised that way, my parents never punished. Don't get me wrong, we got punishments, but they never punished. They gave us consequences. And they were very careful to always explain the correlation between what they did and what we did. Like if we were acting out with our siblings when we were playing, we had to sit in our room, because only kids who are ready to play with other kids are able to play in the area with all the other kids. And I think the same would come here, whatever it is, maybe give consequences and not punishment. Something that the kid can understand is a direct relationship with what they did.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Shiffel. It's absolutely true. And in fact, if you want to look it up, if to do a little research on that yourself, it's called I'm going to unmute you again, Paula, so you have to follow. If you want to do some research on it, just look up outcome-based parenting or consequences. You know, the Torah, I think we're going to end with you, Paul. It's really late, and I'm delighted to, I think this conversation is at least important, probably more than what I had to say, you know, than my presentation. This is where the rubber meets the road, as we say. But, you know, I heard from Dr. Bencian Twersky, Dr. Abraham's son, tell me something very interesting, that it says that Yisro, Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, it says that Yishma Yisro, he came out to the desert because he heard stuff. He heard something. So Rashi says, what did he hear? He heard miracles. He heard the Mechemes Amalek, the war with Amalek, and he heard about the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea. So the miracles, the bells and whistles, brought him to see the Jewish people. He wasn't from the Jewish people. So he said. So then he says later, a few psukim later, I never saw it, you know, till Dr. Tversky told it to me. He says, "Ata yadati ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'olakim." Now I know that the God of the Jews is the true God. You would think because he split the sea, right? That's what attracted him in the first place. And he says, "Ki badavar asher zadu aleihem," that God punishes midah keneged midah. God issues punishments that are logical and correlate, which is what Sarah was talking about. And that means that you thought about it and you want it to be a learning experience and you know, you want it to have meaning rather than just losing your temper and flying off the handle. I think, Paul, that the expectation of a child that tells the parent, if the parent said, "Okay, Shaful, sure, no problem, you know, you're doing marijuana, it's fine, don't worry about it, you'll be fine." I think I would be upset if my parent didn't say something. You know, when I first started dealing with teens at risk a lifetime ago, Paul, I remember a young lady complaining to me. She said, "I'm the only one in my class, high school kid, I'm the only one in my class that doesn't have a curfew." Does not. And I thought I heard it wrong. I said, "What?" She said, "I promise you exactly like this." You know, I was just getting into this, and it was a transformational moment for me, listening and understanding what kids are thinking. And I said, "Doesn't have a curfew?" The kids complain to me that they do have curfews. And she says, "Yeah, my mother says she trusts me. She's just busy. She doesn't want to be bothered raising me." And she said, "You know what? You know what it feels like when we're together, a group of 10 friends, and everybody's texting their mother because they're late, and I don't have anyone who cares enough to worry about me." You ever told the story? And she was crying, and I cried. It hurt me so badly. She said it like that. "I don't have anyone that worries about me." So, you know, kids do, everybody has their role to play. Kids' role is to kvetch and argue, you know? but they understand. In fact, if they're telling you about it and you wouldn't react, I would think that it would be kind of bizarre to them. Okay, folks?
Sorry, on the other question, sorry, if I have a minute to follow up. On the question of what are your duties to other parents, you said, well, if your kid says, "Well, this is confidential," do you have to have a conversation of, when you tell me it's confidential, it's subject to it not being life-threatening? And then the other thing is, you said people were hurt over the years when you shared your opinion, but you also seem to say you should be keeping things to yourself unless they're life-threatening. So in what cases are you talking to other parents? Is it just when they asked you for advice, as opposed to you hearing something about their child, that exactly. You came to them and said your kid's speeding or your kid's touching these substances or whatever?
Thank you for following it. This is really is important. So when I was talking about, I meant, you know, people would ask me for advice. And, you know, when someone asks me for advice, I treat them like I would my own child. And I just say, you know, sometimes I say, "You sure you want to hear?" I usually say something like that. And they say, "Yeah, sure." And, you know, sometimes it's painful for me on a personal level, because I know that in all likelihood, we might not speak again. And I feel a responsibility to say what's on my mind, you know, not much on my mind, what the person asked me. But as far as telling people things that I've heard in the street, I generally don't, unless it's really important or unless I have a close relationship. And you also have to know the people. In other words, some parents will behave terribly. You know, if you know someone's an authoritarian parent and they're going to just go crazy and throw the kid out of the house and all of that, it's like a mishmash of a lot of different factors. So there isn't one answer. All of those components, how's the parent going to handle this? So if your child tells you, you know, what we told our kids, if you tell me to keep it confidential, I'm going to keep it confidential unless someone's life is in danger. Okay, that's why I say even Shabbos, you know, the Torah values life, you know, Shabbos, life is docha Shabbos, you know, pushes away Shabbos if someone's life is in danger. And then you judge it accordingly. Do you tell the other parents? I think there are many, many, many factors that come to bear in this, and it's all together. Okay, folks, thank you so much. Continue the journey. I would just tell you, you know, I would just ask you to be emissaries. If you found that this is helpful and you feel that it's, you know, helping you think, spread the word among your friends, you know, send them links. You know, I decided to do it this way. I decided to do it this way and really prepare. And I've never done anything like this remotely. You know, I've never done it in this way. I felt that Corona gave an opportunity that we're home, basically. And I just felt I've been wanting to do this for a very long time and I just never got to it. You know, it's my intention, God willing, Hashem should give me years and good health. People come and ask, thank you. People come and ask me for advice. I'm telling you now, when this sixth session is done, I'm gonna make it a prerequisite. Anyone calls me for anything, I'm gonna say, I had this six videos. Call me back after you watch. I'm not kidding. Fesky, you like the idea, huh? What?
I love it.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely, you know, and just on a personal level, you know, with teens at risk and later on with child sexual abuse, I was very vocal about things at the beginning and many other organizations got involved. I naturally moved towards prevention. That's been the pattern of my life. I talk about things, I advocate, and then I try to see like, okay, what can we, you know, it's important to build hospitals, but like, why don't we fix the roads a little bit? So I made the Gemara book to keep kids in school, you know, knowing Gemara. And we made the child safety book for this. And I view this in that same category, that a lot of the stuff that comes, you know, after years of issues, I believe could be avoided with education and the Ani Bina Li Gevura. So I just ask you, I'm delighted. Like I said at the moment of the first class, the nicest thing you could say is you got me thinking, Rabbi. You know, but I would love if you feel that it's something meaningful. You have social media, get the message out. First of all, it's in your self-interest because if your friends start becoming more cognizant and aware of this, you'll in all likelihood you'll have less challenges with your children's friends. But that's on a selfish level. But on the Klal Yisrael level, I think this is so important. And you know, we didn't get this stuff. I love it when people see my Gemara book. They say, Rabbi Horowitz, you know, I wish I had this Gemara book. Where were you when I was in yeshiva? I say, where was I when I was in yeshiva? So this series is meant to get you to reflect, to think, to get into this and. But the emissaries, that's the nicest thank you that you could do for me. The thing that would make me most grateful is that more and more parents should start thinking this way. And I really hope and pray that it will be a tremendous benefit in a preventative way. Good night, everyone. See you Thursday. Keep thinking good thoughts about parenting. This was delightful, Sarah. This was amazing. This was just wonderful. Thanks for doing this. Good night, everyone. We'll see you. And thank you, darling. So good you're here. Hey, where did it disappear? Go ahead, Sarah. It wasn't just you. You guys are having a good time watching us try to turn it off. Huh? Okay, 1 second.
Your mouse went.
The mouse is here. Oh, let me try it. Got it?
No.
No, let me try it again. 1 second.